58 years ago, the State of Israel was created by UN mandate and force of arms in the land that was then Palestine. In that time, violence, always justified by the perpetrators as in the defense of their people's security or rights, has brought neither security for the Israelis nor the right of return for the Palestinians. The leadership of the Israeli state, at great cost to themselves and even greater cost to the people of Lebanon, have recently demonstrated again the futility of seeking a military solution to the political problem created by the birth of their nation. Within Israel, other voices call for other solutions. Join us on Thresholds for a conversation with Hannah Barag, former secretary to David Ben-Gurion and a leader in Maksam Watch. This is a group of Israeli women who daily monitor dozens of checkpoints in the West Bank to see that the human and civil rights of the Palestinians are protected and to make what they see happening known throughout Israeli society. It will be the first of several conversations with the Israeli opposition to Israeli state policies. You're invited to participate. That's at 11 a.m. this Thursday on Thresholds here on KPFT, Houston.
Years ago this past Monday, my old friend Wes called and found me at home, and he told me that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. I turned on the TV and saw that in fact both towers had been hit and were smoking uncontrollably, belching flames and smoke like the world's largest power plant. When I saw the first one collapse and then the second, I felt profound shock and grief and immense frustration at my own powerlessness. I spent much of the day intermittently breaking into tears. I felt mixed waves of sadness and anger, alternating through me like a current, like a sine wave. I spent an hour or so on the internet researching cockpit cabins and happened upon a long article from Salon from 1999 that detailed the escalating number of cockpit breaches in commercial airliners and the reticence of the airline industry to pay the money necessary to reinforce the doors. Now they'll pay the money, I thought. Somehow Wes and I managed to meet later that day for lunch. Surely, I said, now this country will honestly face the waste from its overconsumption, especially of oil from the Middle East. Surely now, after we get the guys who did this, we will take steps to change our energy consumption habits, our consumption of forests and oceans and minerals. Surely we will understand that projection of power into foreign lands to secure resources has a price. Surely even this administration can no longer hold back the floodgates of change. I said stuff like that day, trying to put together some coherent sense of the connections between the attacks and U.S. foreign policies. And yet I was wrong, totally wrong. The country was not ready to see truth, and certainly could not as long as it was preyed upon by master propagandists like Karl Rove, Richard Cheney, and even the president himself, George W. Bush. The people of this country, manipulated and worked over by economic pressures, failing schools, and lobotomized major media, stood little chance against the Bush onslaught in the wake of 9/11. And the people themselves bear blame as well, for willingly handing over their critical faculties and their faith in themselves and their born right to be skeptical of the claims made by any man or woman, regardless of their power or prestige or pocketbook. The people had in some sense become wicked and blind, just as had those at Sodom and Gomorrah. 9/11 was an attack perpetrated by a radical group of killers relatively small in number and ostracized and shunned by the vast majority of the world, both then and now. The response called for by the 9/11 attacks was one of precision, intelligence, discernment, and care. It called for precise intelligence, agile surveillance, heightened communications and security measures, and cooperation and goodwill from the vast numbers of people across the globe who held out their hands in friendship and condolence to this grieving nation. 9/11 called for a leader to put this evil gang in perspective for us, to point out exactly how they were dangerous, but also how they were not, in that they posed a substantially lesser threat than previous mortal threats that this nation has faced. Global war launched by fascists in the 1940s, and nuclear showdowns with a socialist state gone sour. 9/11 called for a president who would warn his advisors not to play fast and loose with intelligence, not to provide inaccurate counsel, not to sensationalize matters for political gain, not to drive divisions between the population or between government branches, not to create tensions with populations in other parts of the world. 9/11 called for a president who would strike the right balance between revenge and justice for the perpetrators, and study, analysis, and then amelioration of the causes of their hatred. 9/11 called for a president who would recognize the unique opportunity to, as Lincoln said, bind up wounds and start the world on a long march toward true peace and prosperity, based not just upon respect for political rights, but also for cultural heritage and environmental and resource needs. But the president and his henchmen instead gave us exactly the opposite of what we needed, because their interests have never been congruent with the truth. Instead of a constrained, measured, analytical approach to the vengeance we sought, the threats we endured, and the problems we faced, the nation was fed a constant, unremitting, fattening diet of unconstrained scares, expansive, phantasmagoric interpretations of actual threats, and packaged proposals and experiments to remake vast portions of the world at the end of the guns of indoctrinated young Americans, without any reference to the realities of those foreign places. What should have begun and ended as an investigation, arrest, trial, and punishment of a band of killers and their true affiliates has turned into a massive, resource-hogging, hatred-building, polarizing, and deadly morass called the War on Terror. It is, like so many other of their wars, the war on drugs, the war on science, the war on evolution, the war on welfare, the war on big government, the war on sex, ill-defined, illogical, counterproductive, hypocritical, economically wasteful, destructive, and in the end, unwinnable. On September 12th, we had all become children of 9/11, I among you. And as time went on and I saw how wrong I was in my predictions that now change would come, but how right I still felt in my convictions, I started this show after asking for a chance to speak out. The first New Capitol shows spoke out against the imminent war in Iraq and pointed out that the Bush administration had been planning such a war long before it was even in power. One of my first guests was Nicholas Lemon, then the Washington correspondent for The New Yorker, now the dean of the Columbia School of Journalism. I, a total newcomer to this media profession at the time, asked him, an immensely talented and highly regarded journalist, what possible veracity he saw in the Bush administration's evidentiary claims for war in Iraq. I recall this establishment journalist telling KPFT listeners in response that he just truly doubted that Bush officials, including those in the Pentagon, would knowingly harm the credibility of this nation by proffering nonsense to the world. Put another way, the current dean of Columbia School of Journalism, the most prestigious school of journalism in the country, decided that it was more important to trust the intentions of the Bush administration than to perform true investigative journalism and find the real truth. This show is therefore a child of 9/11, a child born of the frustration at the misguided power of those who have since 9/11 controlled our government and who have made mistake after mistake after mistake and insulted us further by insisting on their rectitude, even as reality said, and even as reality continues to say, something different. They have made both mistakes of commission, choosing to take actions that have hurt us, and made mistakes of omission, not taking other actions that we desperately need. These people will not last in power forever. Their smug arrogance, their soundbite communications, their monotonous propaganda, repeated over and over again, never bothering to change even a few words for fear that an uneducated public, for which they bear large responsibility for creating and maintaining, will misunderstand them and glimpse a few rays of truth. Their dependence upon fear and separation, upon weakness and ignorance, and upon graft and bribery are all wearing thin. They too shall pass, just as 9/11 passed 5 years ago, and just as my frustration passes each Thursday into a guarded and hopeful optimism as I step into this booth to be with you on the radio. And history will look at them with the ignominy that they deserve. History will be pitiless with them, in the same way that they have been pitiless with our country, refusing to mercifully level with those who look up to them for the truth. In about 800 days, the self-declared war president will be finished attempting to ameliorate his own personal demons and deficiencies at the expense of our national community. And as at the end of most wars, when the gates swing open, reunions are held, tears flow, and people sob and laugh that they have survived the war, the warriors, and the war presidents, so we too shall have our happy days. Days of reckoning are coming. If you cannot feel it, just give it some more time. They may be coming slowly, or they may be coming fast. They may come in November when the nation decides if it likes the way things are going or if it wants some change. Or they may not come in November. They may come in a quick flash, or they may subtly dawn like many mornings. We will hope and work so that they will come peacefully. 9/11, for all of its horror and sadness, brought out community in the world. And although the Bush administration has done its best to destroy communities and leave us isolated from each other, there are many of us who are determined to prevent that from happening. In the wake of 9/11, we saw in many ways that we are not alone. But it was the haunting image of two people at the top of the World Trade Center, grasping each other's hands and then jumping to plummet to their deaths to avoid the flames. Together, hand in hand, that spoke most powerfully that day of the human need to connect in the face of terror, hatred, and madness. And that, more than anything, the mission of connecting people into community is the mission, is the business, is the purpose of this radio network, of this station, and of this show. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. We're going to try to throw off the blues here and take your call. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. A pleasure to be with you this morning. Again, 713-526-5738. My plans for the show are simply to throw the microphones open to you, callers. Saw many of you at Amy Goodman's talk last night. It was truly, truly tremendous. I said for a long time that Amy Goodman is a national treasure. You certainly don't need me to tell you that, but it's truly astounding to see somebody with such an incredible command of events, of politics, of history, and yet also to be so closely in contact with other people moving around the world, other people who are enduring tragedies, who are politically active, and to be able to talk about their experiences with such a depth of feeling. I turned to my wife last night and I said, you know, there is only one irreplaceable broadcaster in this country. Only one. You could get rid of all of the rest of us. I honestly believe this. Of course, if you got rid of us at KPFT, we'd certainly be poor. But you could get rid of the most other journalists in this country and things would march on. They would be able to be replaced rather quickly. But Amy Goodman truly is a replaceable national treasure. And I think one of the things that we're all trying to do is to clone her in a way. We're all trying now to follow her lead and to bring our own perspectives to media. Media is the act of bringing message. And I want you all to consider how you can bring message in your own personal lives. If you listen to KPFT and you think you know others who should be listening to KPFT, please tell them. We rely upon you to tell other people and to spread the news that there is a station here in Houston that is important for people to listen to. So just do that. Tell people, listen to KPFT. Maybe start them out on the BBC. Then Democracy Now, and then they can listen to local programming like New Capital Show. Phones are lined up here, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I don't think we've had calls on the show for several weeks now, and so it is your turn to be on the New Capital Show. We ready? Not yet. Well, let's see if we can start with one call. Eugene.
Hello?
You're on.
I just listened to the editorial on the New Capital Show.
Yes.
And I thought it was excellent, and I was wondering if I can get a written or a voice copy of the editorial.
I'll tell you what. There's going to be a rebroadcast of the show at newcapitalshow.com, and it'll be there. And I will see if I can put together a printed copy that can be available for download as well. I certainly appreciate your comments. I've worked on it for about a week now, and I wanted to get it exactly right, so I hope it was.
It's absolutely excellent. It's what we feel about this country and where it's going, so it's quite important.
Thank you.
Bye.
So that brings us to housekeeping. NewCapitalShow.com is the website. You can sign up for a newsletter. You can receive updates on the show. You can receive information about events that are coming up. I do want to mention that Mark Lesser is coming on October 28th. He is the author of ZBA, Zen of Business Administration. This is an event that is sponsored by the Houston Zen Center and is the first event that New Capital Show itself is co-sponsoring. If you have a stressful work life or if you want to have a more productive work life, this all-day seminar on October 28th is the thing for you. Mark will talk about ways that you can take some quiet moments in the middle of your day, reestablish your centering, your grounding, and your strength, and actually become a more productive person at work. More on the calls. Let's see. Phones are a little chaotic today. Let's go to line 6. I think it's Kenny. Kenny, is it you?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
No, thank you very much. If I could just make a comment, and I'll just hang up and listen to your response. Long-time listener to KPFT, long-time listener to Amy Goodman, and let me just say that I absolutely disagree. didn't have 2 weeks to put together my thoughts, but I'll give you a quick shot.
Please.
You said, as a hardworking middle-class American, Houstonian, Texan, and you listen to ads that say, come back to Louisiana, we've got $130,000 for you. You see people complaining because they've gotten 6 months plus much of rent, and then 3 more months, and then now we need 3 more months. Well, you know, I got to make my house note every month.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make my light bill every month. Nobody at the end of the month, if I don't pay my light bill, they just shut it off.
Let me ask you, Kenny, would you trade places with people who lost everything they had in New Orleans?
Well, let me ask you this.
Would you trade places?
I think I would handle it more like the people in Mississippi and more like the people in the balance of Louisiana that everybody's forgotten about. Take people in like the small parishes that were just destroyed, right? Everybody wants to talk about New Orleans and everything that they lost and this, that, and the other.
No, I'm happy
but
to...
But drive through Mississippi, uh-huh, where these people aren't complaining and these people aren't begging for this and begging for that. These people just got out and started cleaning up their houses and cleaning up their stuff, and they depended on their family and they depended on their friends.
So your complaint is against social welfare in this country in the face of disaster?
No. My complaint is against the lack of personal responsibility, and that is whether...
But would you trade places? I mean, you've described your circumstances.
Weren't we almost there? Wasn't it bearing down on us?
And
we all had choices to make, right?
But it didn't, Kenny. And my question to you is, would you trade places as hard as you're working? And I'm sympathetic to that, and I understand that. Believe me. And I think here at KPFT, every day people discuss the fact that people like you need to be strengthened and bolstered, and that there's a better way to do it than the current government is trying to do it. And in fact, sending...
Well, that's the thing. It's not the government's responsibility. It's my responsibility. I've got to get up in the morning, and if I don't have a job, I've got to go find one.
Kenny, why do you think, what philosophy has come to you to convince you that if you're having a difficult time in life, that you don't have a community, a national community, that can come to your aid and help you? Who has told you that that's the right philosophy to have, that you have to be a fiercely independent and always ultra-strong person who doesn't have...
Not necessarily mm-hmm. ultra-strong.
But who can...
But when you lean... Uh-huh. But your parents and your upbringing.
Uh-huh.
When you need somebody to lean on,
right,
you need to lean on your friends, you need to lean on your family.
But why can't I lean on...
your religion? Why do I have to lean on the state?
But,
why do I have to lean on somebody else's money that was forcibly taken from them... Uh-huh. Taxation in order for them to give it to me, right, so I can have whatever it is I might need. Now, do people need help? Yes. Is it the government's responsibility to help people and be there for them in times of need? Absolutely.
Okay.
But why is it not where's all the outrage about Louisiana's local government and the money they spend and the levy board that was disbanded because of all the money that was lost and stolen and this and that over the years?
Mm-hmm.
Where is all the outrage about that? Everybody wants to drop this at FEMA's door and President Bush's door. And I have to say that I don't think it mattered who was president at the time when the hurricane came in. It was still going to be just as devastating.
Mm-hmm.
We were still going to have all these same issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kenny, I think to the extent that that there has been bad local government in Louisiana, that should indeed be a focus and should indeed be something.
But is it? Do you hear it on the national media? Do you hear it on Amy Goodman's show? Where is... I appreciate Amy's work, and I appreciate all of... I won't even call it liberal media. I'll just call it progressive media.
Well, I want you to do this for me, Kenny. I want you to go to newcapitalshow.com, and I want you to write a good note on... I'm going to post an entry for today's show, and I want you to tell people what resources they can access to discover and learn about the situation of local government that betrayed people in Louisiana and how we can go about addressing it and fixing it. Will you do that for me? Will you work in partnership with this show to bring about that effort? Is that something?
I do appreciate your show, and I always more than willing to listen to both sides, but I'll be honest that I think that
we all have to listen to all sides. There's no one side.
People have gotten away from self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Okay.
And I think if they get back to it, they might see a little more success in their lives.
Okay, Kenny, thanks.
Thank you.
You know, I want to say, folks, that if anything, this country has been fed a steady diet of the need for self-reliance for hundreds of years. And there is a place for self-reliance, but like everything, the golden rule applies. A nation that is all self-reliance and no community, you know, is not a nation. What's the point of having a nation which is there to designate people commonly and to pool resources if it's all about self-reliance? I mean, this is one of the incredibly paradoxical things about the right wing. They scream about nation, patriotism, the need for binding us together within a common unit called the United States of America. But there's nothing communal in their vision about that United States of America across national lines. It's all got to be brought down local, or to the local church level, or to the local family level. The minute somebody in New York is asked to care for somebody in New Orleans, all bets are off. Well, why have a nation? You see, there is an inexorably flawed logic at the heart of the conservative case. And that is it. Why have a nation if it's all about self-reliance? We can all get our bows and arrows and go out hunting and gathering, and we'll all cross over whatever lines we need to. Forget the nation. The whole point of a nation is to gather people together in a common cause, including social welfare in the event of disaster. Back to the phones. I'm sorry, our timer is not working on the phones today, so I don't know. I'm going to do my best to take people in order, but I don't know what the order is, so you'll have to forgive me today. I'm sorry. Line one is David. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Leo. You know, I heard a caller, you know, complaining about the evacuees, and I just wanted to remind people that Louisiana doesn't have a state government. That's kind of a joke, because the federal government went in there and dismantled Louisiana during the Reagan administration. We're always the leading edge of the right-wing bullwhip. And, you know, people have a very dim view of Louisiana, but those people didn't create their own government. Secondly, they don't benefit. The entire nation benefits from the New Orleans port and the oil and gas industry in Louisiana, but those poor people in New Orleans don't benefit from that, and that's because of federal regulations and interference. It's not because of the state government. It's not because of graft in the state government. And thirdly, it was a low-rent place for a lot of people who were not able to work for one reason or the other, lived there. And once they get evacuated, it's hard to, you know, tell them, well, they've never worked before, so how are they going to work now, you know?
Yep.
And so, you know, that's the situation we're looking at. And if you were to do the same kind of a disaster would hit Houston, you would find out that a lot of the population here also just doesn't work. You know, so the idea of just going out and finding you a job and going to work is just not, you know, that's all political in America anyway.
Thanks, David.
All right.
I did a show a few weeks ago on General Motors and the pension plan. It got a big response. Frankly, I've gotten big response all over the country from that show. But that show was essentially about sharing of risk. And that is one of the things that a nation should do, is to spread localized risk among a larger population. Now, let's talk about some of the risks that I discussed that day in that show. And that show is there on the website for you to listen to again if you didn't hear it or you forgot it. There are certain, I don't want to say catastrophes, but there are certain risks that people incur when they live. Bad health. Old age. And destruction of property. So, basically, what FEMA represents is a bureaucracy designed to pool and share and ameliorate the risk that might occur to a local area in the United States. Now, folks, that could happen any number of places. It could happen from a terrorist act. It can happen from an earthquake. It can happen from a hurricane. Now, if you live in a nation, you have to ask yourself, is a proper function of the nation to ensure the social welfare in the event that risks are borne out? We know that old age is going to be borne out and there need to be pensions. We know that people are going to have health problems and that they need health insurance. And we know, because the bell curve says so, statistics say that there's going to be some natural disaster that occurs in the country, perhaps several of them, you know, over a 10-year period. And so what we do as a nation is we say, well, we have a nation. The whole point of a nation is that we're able to pool together our resources, share a common cause, and in the event that something happens to a bunch of us who don't have the ability to bear the cost of that risk on their own, we step in. Or as I say, why do you want a nation? You can't have it both ways. You can't be saying, I'm a patriot, but those people in New Orleans, they're not going to get anything and shouldn't. You can't say, I'm a patriot, but I don't care about the health care of millions and millions of uninsured children. And the market's going to take care of it, as George Soros has pointed out in my last show. And believe me, George Soros knows a little thing or two about markets. The markets are not going to take care of those things. Back to the phones. Eugene, yes, welcome to New Capital Show.
Yes, sir. I am the Eugene, not the first person. The first call you took, that was a
yep.
Eugene, I don't think. Okay, listen.
We'll take all Eugenes that want to call today.
Great. I actually agree a little bit with the caller. I guess his name was Kenny.
That yep.
was so, outraged about the people that might be abusing the government money. But I have something to say to him. You know, look at this $1.5 billion a week that Bush is spend in Iraq while we march our best and brightest off into a meat grinder.
Yeah, I mean, that's right, Eugene.
You know, you got an $860 billion trade. You got $450 billion a year that we're borrowing from China
right.
and putting on our kids' credit. The point I would like to make to him is that we need to prioritize. That you don't worry about vacuuming the living room rug while the house is on fire.
Eugene, we call this the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule is a very valuable rule for all of you to kind of spot in your lives. There are all kind of applications. For example, let's take a company. Most companies find that 20% of their products account for 80% of their sales. And vice versa, 80% of their products account for only 20% of their sales. And so what, you know, good businesses do is they go and they take out those 80% of the products, get rid of them that aren't selling very much. You know, what you'll find is that 20% of the list of your problems account for 80% of the cost of your problems. And that's exactly what you're pointing out. And I think that's right. I mean, I would urge Kenny to spot the fact that there is far greater waste going on in many other segments of our government. Kenny's desire...
That's used to distract him and others like him, as many people as they can,
sure
from the real issues.
Yeah. Kenny's desire to have a fiscally sound government is a good one. And
sure.
I support. And if anyone supports that, I support it.
And people not being motivated to achieve. I mean, that's something that we all need to try to be motivated
yeah.
and help everyone to be
yeah.
motivated.
But listen,
that's not why I called.
Okay. Real quick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First, man, powerful introduction, man. You left me sitting here at the table with my hands in my head because, I mean, that is just so true. I mean, we are in a crisis here. So that was one of the problems that's allowing people to be bamboozled is this right-wing radio. Okay. We have a little group out here. We're a political action committee, a little Democratic group. We're trying to start a boycott of the sponsors of these hate radio things. I would like to give you the website, if that's okay.
Please.
Okay, it's battlegrounddemocrats.org. Just punch in Battleground Democrats, and it takes you to our website. We just got it up the last day or two. It's a nascent effort, so you know, it's still a work in progress, but we are trying to organize a boycott of these idiots. If you read some of the things that these, if you never listen to that AM radio, like AM 950, you don't know the filth that's being spewed out of there every day.
Thanks, Eugene.
Yes, and people are being, Hey, can I say one more quick thing?
Well, I got a lot of calls. How about we'll pick it up next week? Will that be okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Eugene.
Thank you, bye.
I do want to quickly follow up on Eugene's comments on AM radio. The AM radio issues, and it's not all AM radio issues, but many, there are several shows that are truly appalling. And it's not a partisan issue, although, of course, these radio stations or these shows take the Republican side of things. Oftentimes, the Republican viewpoint isn't right-wing enough for these radio stations. I mean, believe it or not. You know, someone comes to mind like Michael Savage. And I have asked an attorney before, you know, isn't there a case for legal action? These people are literally almost inciting violence, fomenting violence in the community. I've often wondered if somebody went off and said, you know, I committed this violence because Michael Savage incited me to do it, if there would be any case there. It truly is a very, very sad situation. There is actual hate and violence that is being fomented and taught and spewed into the minds of Americans on AM radio. If you're just flipping through the dial right now and you're listening to AM radio, I urge you, just take a break. Just stop from there. Give KPFT a listen for a little bit. Or you don't have to listen to us exclusively, but add us in, you know? Sprinkle us into the mix of what you listen to. I think that you will be very, very pleasantly surprised to see that there are other viewpoints out there. Let's keep on going here. Christina, line five.
Hi.
Welcome.
I work for a social service agency in Houston, and we deal with people who have relocated from New Orleans or who are here and want to go back every day. And I've heard so many people say what the first caller said, people in my family, people in the community.
So set us straight.
The reality is that racism and classism are alive and well in America. And I've heard so many stories from people who are trying to find a place to live, who are trying to get jobs. There was a woman on Democracy Now! This morning talking about that. And it's exactly what she was saying, which was, you go on a ton of interviews, we're going to call you back. You go to look at the rental houses, sure, the application looks great, we'll get back with you, and then people never hear anything back. The other thing I think that people are dealing with is that, you know, they use their cell phone from New Orleans, and they immediately can't get a call back on anything. So the idea that people need to be self-sufficient is really amusing to me, considering the way that New Orleans historically was set up. So many cities have been set up so that poor people and people of color are relegated to one area. And in New Orleans, it was the area that was, you know, going to sink. So, you know, I think the conversation is really so much bigger than people being self-reliant, because when we in this country for hundreds of years in our slave trade and our, you know, genocide have set up situations intentionally and calculatedly so that people cannot be self-reliant. There is no hope of self-reliance. And yes, I mean, I certainly want to say that, of course, there are all kinds of middle-class Native people and African-American people and Latinos, and of course, that all exists. But the people who have not been lifted up because society does not create the kind of community that lifts people up, like what you were talking about, are the people that suffer every single time, and then we blame them because we don't want to take responsibility for what's been done to them as a country and historically.
Christina, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I have an email coming in from Brandy, who says, I am from Louisiana myself, and contrary to what Kenny's opinion of the people there is, I know plenty of people in Louisiana that did, in fact, pick up what was left of their homes and belongings and clean up their own neighborhoods and get their own work done. The plain and simple fact is Kenny is stereotyping, and most of the whining and complaining is coming from a very small majority, minority of the population. Also, there were people who lived there for years who paid their insurance and paid their taxes and can't get a thing done and worked very hard their whole lives and don't deserve to be ridiculed over the radio. Look, do we want community or do we not want community? That's it. That's the question. Do you want community or not community? And shouldn't nation be bound up with the idea of community? If it is, and you are a patriot, and you are for the concept of nation, remember, nations are not all that old. You know, the idea of nations dates back only a few hundred years. So if you are still on board with the idea of nation, and many of you aren't, many of you think it's time to have a more global perspective, and I think that's intriguing. Think back to John Lennon's world. Imagine one world. But assuming that you still believe in the concept of nation, and you subscribe to it, shouldn't community be part of that idea? And isn't part of community helping those when they are in need? Not blindly and not without reference to fiscal discipline, but legitimately and generously. I think so. Or what's a nation for? Next up is Maria. Maria, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Listen, about New Orleans, I understand, and I really, really feel sorry for all those people. But what I don't understand, and I would like you to talk about it, is why they are, the companies that are doing the cleanups and the reconstruction and everything, why are they going to get people from other, like from Honduras and Peru, because I know that's for a fact, instead of saying, okay, there are a lot, hundreds of young men, strong young men that can go over there and help and get paid. I don't understand why they are not doing that. Can you say something about it?
Do you
understand what I mean?
Say it again. See if you can...
Okay. How come the companies, all those companies that are cleaning up in New Orleans, why they don't hire these young men that are here instead of going... And bring people from other places to do the job.
If they're not doing that, I think they should be doing that.
Well, I
don't know enough about it, about what's going on there.
Okay, I saw in one of the Spanish channels that there are companies that are going to Honduras, to Peru, to bring men to work in New Orleans, and
uh-huh.
they offer them room and board.
Uh-huh.
And they're not doing it. They sometimes they say, oh, we haven't got pay, so we cannot pay you.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's one of the reasons that they don't hire the people that are here that can go and do the cleanup.
Yeah.
Do you understand what
I
mean?
Well, I do, Maria. I'm sorry. I just don't know enough about who is on the ground doing the cleanup. But if somebody does know, send me an email at newcapitalshow.com or post a comment on today's show entry, which is now up. It's called Requiem for 9/11, or call into the show, although we've only got about 17 minutes left in a full board. So I'm sorry, Maria. I'm sorry. I just don't know enough about it.
Okay.
But you've informed us all now through the radio, and that's wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Next up is our friend Abadi. Abadi, welcome.
Good morning, Leo.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Two things real quick.
Mm-hmm.
To the right-wing hypocrites, I'd like to ask him if they had any objections to the $86 billion, $86 billion that was given in the first 2 weeks after 9/11 to the airline industry. And
was it that much?
$86 billion.
That sounds high to me. I thought it was like 10 or something. But anyway, a lot was given.
Something billion. My brain recalls the number 86 billion dollars.
All right, well, maybe we'll get some clarity on that.
Okay,
sounds
now,
high to me, but no, go on.
The
yep.
point is that nobody objected, or no voices were heard objecting to a dole out to an industry that only lost 4 planes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is totally disingenuous to talk about people being self-reliant when they were uprooted and kidnapped and taken to a totally new environment.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, there is no possibility for full employment opportunities no place in America.
Mm-hmm.
So this nonsense of getting a job is part of the mythology of the right wing and those who are in denial that want to project and I think distract more than anything else.
It's hard. It's hard a body to find a job, almost regardless of who you are.
And you can have
it's one of the hardest, most traumatic, difficult things for anybody to do.
You can have 2 degrees and you're overqualified.
It is a hard thing to find a job. It's a very hard thing to find a job when you're in a new city with absolutely nothing to your name.
It's a hard job to find one if you're in the city. Last point. Last night, I wore a T-shirt which said on the front side that war, if the nation's at war, who declared it, and who signs the peace treaty? Invasions are not wars. And unfortunately, Leo, Amy is pandering to the fascist illusion of our being at war, which is the justification for the further erosion of our liberties and soon our very freedoms. And it would seem to me that as a person who knows better the meaning of words and someone who has taken to task other media sources that misuse the language, that she should be held to no lower standard. And although I am a fan of Democracy Now! And appreciate many things that Amy Goodman has done, I cannot be silent any more than Americans need to be silent about other issues that people that we support do that are not always sound or in our best interest. Responsibility for being a fan requires me to ask of her and demand of her, and I handed her my protest flyer personally. And she thanked me for receiving it and went on to back to her business. But that must be addressed. We are not at war. This nation is about the business of invasions, which is totally different.
Yep. Thanks, Abadi.
Bye.
I think it's I think it's a very, very good point. You know, it's legitimate to say, I think, that we are in a war, conflict, whatever you want to call it, with Al-Qaeda. But I think Abadi makes exactly the point, and I don't think Amy would disagree, but I think Abadi makes a good point. You know, there was an invasion launched of Iraq. There was no war. You're in a war now there because it's drawn a response. But the progenitor of it was an invasion. It may be a distinction without a difference. I don't know. Abadi feels strongly about it, and so that's worth something. Line two is Sheila. Sheila, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Good morning. Yeah, I had a small comment about in regard to Katrina and what the guy was saying. My question was, aren't those people taxpayers too? I hear a lot of talk about our taxpayer dollars and all this and that, but my quick comment is, aren't they taxpayers too?
Yep. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
Folks, that's the whole point of... yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of paying into a risk pool. Not all of us are going to wreck our cars this year, but those of us who purchase insurance into a risk pool expect that if something does happen, we're going to be able to make a claim out of that risk pool. And that's the point of a nation. And again, I hearken back to the show I did on General Motors. I really liked that show. I don't like to say that about my own shows, but... I would continue to draw people back to that show as a discussion point on shared risk pools. And to me, that's exactly what, you know, there's no need to be politically recriminative about it. A disaster occurred in one part of the country. There ought to be a shared risk pool put in by the rest of the country to help ameliorate the effects of disasters. It should be the case in the event that skyscrapers in New York are hit or earthquakes in California break out. Now, we should be very, very careful about creating incentives for people to settle themselves in places where they shouldn't be settling. You know, that's another side of it. And I do think that should be the case as well. But when disaster comes and people have paid into the risk pools, as Sheila points out, is what a tax is, paying into a risk pool, they have a right to make a claim on that risk pool. Next up is Karen. Karen, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Well, thank you. I'd like to touch on a couple of the things. The one person's question, the lady's question of the men working. Bush, there was no contracts, you know, being voted on, bidded for. It was automatically given to Halliburton, the contracts for renewing and cleaning up in New Orleans. And she's right. They're bringing in outside sources and paying them at a higher rate than taking the young men that she's talking about that live in New Orleans, that are perfectly capable of rebuilding their own city. And you know, when you're paying somebody a minimum wage, you know, the Congress has given themselves 7 pay raises in the last 10 years. And in the last 10 years, we have stayed at $5 an hour. I want anyone, gas has gone up, utilities go up, everything goes up. You tell me anyone that could barely live at $10 an hour, more or less at $5 an hour.
I don't know how people make it, you know, on $100,000 a year.
And you're right about the risk pool. That's what America's about. We have given out, then this war that, as you, the one man stated, it, yes, it wasn't the takeover at first, but it has turned into a war, and we are making terrorists. And I think Amy Goodman is the one person that tries to step up and point these things out, and the Halliburtons and the which are there.
Okay, Karen. Thank you.
And, you know, just we should take care of each other.
Yep.
The money going there should be here to take care of us.
Got to move along. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Let's see. I think Larry's been holding for a bit. Larry, welcome to New Capital Show.
I hope you just give me just a minute, but I'd like to respond to that Sean Hannity, caller. But believe me.
No, listen, Kenny kicked it off. Kenny made his statement. We welcome all callers. He was civil, and he made his point. So go ahead.
I'm talking to you as a programmer, though.
Yep.
You should have known. You should have had the facts to know that what happened in New Orleans was ethnic cleansing. You as a programmer had doubts, and you the Nation magazine for one example.
Well, I don't run this show alone, Larry. I've got a lot of help from all of you out there. So
I know you do.
I don't have all the answers or all the retorts.
The Louisiana Reconstruction Authority is controlled by Republicans, and the head of that thing, his name, I cannot pronounce his last name, but he wants to redevelop those wards and turn those untouched apartment complexes that the people could go back and work. They could go back and live in those apartment complexes. He has those apartments fenced off to keep the people out.
Yep, Larry.
That is ethnic cleansing.
Larry, thank you. Larry, thank you for the call.
Bye.
Larry's comments, Kenny, if you're still listening, just you need to look at that aspect of it. Larry's exactly right. There are political operatives who are seeking to re-engineer the political lines in Louisiana so that it is more of a Republican-looking state. And people who would tend to vote Democratic who now live in Houston, many parts of Houston already vote Democratic, it's not going to change or flip the way those vote. And so there is a very strong political aspect to what is going on as well. It's another aspect of a very complex problem. Let's see, Dawn. Dawn, welcome to New Capital Show.
Hi. I was going to respond to Kenny. I haven't heard your whole show, so I don't know if anybody said this yet. But you know, he talks about how we have to be self-reliant and we've got family and friends to depend on. Well, most of these people from New Orleans were spread throughout the country where they had no family and no friends. Now, the church I go to up in the Woodlands has been helping out about 5 different families. And you wouldn't believe how hard it is to try to find work for them, even though, like, one lady's an LVN. But she has a mentally incapacitated child. There's no friend or family to take care of her child so she can work. There's no transportation like they had in New Orleans.
There's no way to get around.
So
people are just left out there and they're barred from coming back.
Dawn, if any of you out there in organizations like yours, and there are many organizations who are working to help victims of the Katrina hurricane, if any of you would like to bring Kenny on to help him, so he can help work and see and learn about the plight that people are experiencing, please send me an email. And Kenny, if you will send me an email, I will hook you all up, and we will work toward a stronger community and greater understanding. But I'm going to need to hear from both sides of you. Kenny, I'm going to need you to get in hold of me again, and then somebody who's willing to work with Kenny to show him what the realities are that they're experiencing would be great. Dawn, thank you.
All right.
We've got just a couple minutes left. Jeff and Travis, let's see if we can get you in real quick here. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I disagree strongly with you. FEMA was created so that some wealthy builders in Florida could get much wealthier by building on property they never should have built on,
yep,
because the insurance companies,
yep,
were raising rates.
Yep.
And my other point, incidentally, I sat online for 9 callers. I didn't know you had that many lines.
Well, Jeff, we're having a problem. I can't see the time today, so I'm having to. We have something wrong with the computer.
Je comprends. Anyway, the boys that ran the Roman Empire, these dons or emperors, whatever you want to call them, which Dick Cheney more or less fashions himself after, are known for their great public works, and this cheap guy is getting all these benefits without even leaving us something. And it's really disappointing to see these so-called neocons, which are actually reactionaries, in control the way they are.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, thanks for the call. I think you make a very, very important point about the origins of FEMA. And another thing, folks, just because something has a certain origin doesn't mean that its purpose nowadays can't be different. Just because FEMA was formed for purposes of basically insuring Florida real estate doesn't mean that it can't be used to ameliorate hurricanes in New Orleans. But, of course, it is informative to know about origins. Our last call of the day is going to have to be, I'm sorry, Travis. Travis, welcome to New Capital Show.
Yes. Do you support helping people voluntarily or helping people at the barrel of a gun?
Do I support helping people voluntarily or helping them at the barrel of a gun?
Yes.
This sounds like a Rorschach test. Is there a question you have for me?
You kept talking about the government helping people, and the government gets money through taxation, which is pretty much armed robbery for the most part.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Travis, we're out of time. You know, taxes are a fact of life, and taxes are with us. And as I say, if you believe in a nation, they're going to have to be taxes and shared risk pools. I haven't had a gun held at me to pay my taxes, and I hope it doesn't happen. NewCapitalShow.com. If you want to join the mailing list, you can add your name to it. If you want to make comments about today's show, you can do it. There'll be a rebroadcast posted later today. It's been a pleasure to be with you. I will be back with you next week. Take care.
Celebrating our 25th anniversary with Car Wars.
This free display of amazing vehicles on Saturday, September 16th, 2006, from 1 to 6 p.m. occurs at 2401 Munger Street.
Houston's top lowrider clubs,
design shops,
and art car artists
will fill our field full of four-wheeled beauties
with intricately detailed mural-covered hoods,
supercharged hydraulic systems rocketing cars off the ground,
and vehicles decorated beyond belief,
and compete for a prize package that includes premium placement in the 2007 Art Car Parade,
awarded by the popular vote from all the folks that attend Car Wars. The whole day is packaged with excitement, including the finals of the Urban Street Dance Competition. Live